Welcome to the Bear Arms Show. Your fun, sometimes witty, source for news, commentary, and interviews. We focus on efforts to protect and restore the right to keep and bear arms. Arm yourself with the information you need to protect your rights. With your hosts, John and Michael.
Welcome back to the newest, freshest edition of the Bear Arms Show. It is I, your humble host, Mr. John Willett, joined, as always, by a special, special man from out west, Mr. Michael Willett. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Good
evening.
Good evening. You know, if you're down with the bear, put your hands in the air.
Right. Somebody's been watching new releases.
Everybody scream! Who do you?
No, I'm not going to scream.
You're not going to? Oh.
Straight out of.
Hey, yay. That's right. Straight out of Second Amendment.
Right.
Straight
out of the Constitution.
That's right. Straight out of Fairfax. Lobbyist named Chris Cox. Anyway. That would be interesting, wouldn't it? They should have a Chris Cox rap.
There you go.
Yeah, I think we might have to write that. Just kidding. That's never going to happen.
Write it up.
No. Alrighty, I do not have the skills. I do not have the skills. All right, so this episode of the Bear Arms Show, we got a fantastic news bulletin that we're going to talk about right off the top. We're going to go into our interview with Mr. Michael Wolfert of Justifiable Force Training, and we're going to do our call in the shots with recent news of interest to those interested in the Second Amendment advocacy that we talk about week in and week out. But, as we always do, we are going to go to the Words of Wisdom, now brought to you by Black Bag Resources.
And the Bear Arms Show 35, Black Bag Resources, Words of Wisdom, are from Tiffany Madison, who is an author. If I remember correctly, she's from Texas. And she said, "The Second Amendment is timeless, for our founders grasped that self-defense is threefold. Every free individual must protect themselves against the evil will of the man, the mob, and the state."
So you have to protect yourself from the evil will of the man?
No. Well, not the man. Well, yes.
Yes.
The man, I guess.
The man.
You have to protect yourself from men. Or, well, man, individual.
I got you. You know,
someone trying to rob you, mugging, whatever.
Chris Kahn from Undercover Brother.
Yes.
No, wait, he wasn't the man. He was the guy who worked for the man.
Right.
Oh, I messed it up.
So, the person trying to rob you, or mug you, or whatever, the mob, people, you know, every town for gun safety, or whatever it's called, that's the mob. Mothers of Men's...
oh, boy.
Women Who Hate Guns, or whatever the group is called. They're the mob. And then the Department of Justice, the state.
The Department of Justice.
The Obama
administration. Very interesting.
That's what you want to call it.
Thank you. Thank you for explaining that for me.
The executive department of the federal government.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. So we mentioned we had a news bulletin. We're going to talk about our new sponsors. So you might have known, or you might have heard the last Last episode, we talked about how we're going to have sponsors coming on. And you heard the first of them already. So we have Black Bag Resources. That's our friend Sean Fisher, who's actually on the last episode. So basically what happened was he heard my comment about us not having sponsors. And he said, hey, how do I become a sponsor? And we said, well, just do this. And he was like, sure, we'll do that. And then it kind of snowballed from there. And we actually got a couple of other sponsors as a result of that conversation. So our other two sponsors, all three of our sponsors, we have Black Bag Resources. We have Justifiable Force Training. We're going to be talking tonight I already talked to him. But you're going to be hearing
a pre-recorded episode.
That's a pre-recorded interview, right? With Michael Wolfer, who runs Justifiable Force Training there. They do a lot of martial arts and self-defense training, as well as law enforcement training certification stuff and just all kinds of cool things that he has going on. And I talked to him. Spartans are included in the conversation. We got some Spartan stuff happening. And then we also have NJ Concealment Furniture. So New Jersey Concealment Furniture, Dan Ingram's company, who makes really cool stuff that looks great. And you would never know that you could hide guns or other valuables in there. And you get to choose the type of lock that you want. Everything's made to order. Really, really neat. Products.
He has been on the show as well.
Yes, he was on the show back when we were Bold Departure. So he was on the show in the way back.
OG style.
A great guy who's been very supportive of advocacy in New Jersey for a long time. So we got really cool sponsors that, you know, they're supporting us because they believe in what we're doing, and we're very excited to have them come on. All of them now will have been or have been on the show previously or is going to be on this episode. So we're just ecstatic. It's the coolest thing, helping us offset some of our costs of producing the show. So thank you to all of them. And if you could please, if you're listening, let one or all of them know that you appreciate them supporting the show, because they're going to help keep us coming to you over the airwaves and or the internets. So with that, we're going to go into our next segment, sponsored by Justifiable Force Training, our interview with Mr. Michael Wolfert.
From Justifiable Force Training.
Yes. It's kind of meta.
Arm yourself with information to protect your rights. www.beararmsshow.com.
Joining us tonight on the show, we have Mr. Michael Wolfert, who has been studying empty hand in armed combat for the past 20 years. He's a martial artist, law enforcement professional, and a member of Special Operations Group. How are you doing?
How are you, sir?
I am doing well. Thanks for coming on the show with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Now, we haven't talked about it too much on the show, but I did mention last week that we were going to be adding some sponsors. And you're the first one joining us after starting a sponsorship, so we want to thank you for that, too.
Yeah, thank you for this great opportunity. I know the show's come along great. I listened to it in the past, you know, being approached as a sponsor. Great opportunity to support someone that I actually listen to. So it's a great opportunity. Thanks.
We're very proud to have you. Thank you. So for our audience out there, they know what our first question is going to be, and that is Justifiable Force Training. Is that Yoda or Vader?
Well, it's just like the media plays it. Is the gun the problem or is the person the problem? And I don't truly blame the force itself. So I really leave it up to interpretation, because it's really the driving person of the force. So it's a little bit of Yoda, it's a little bit of Darth Vader. It's really depending upon the situation. You know, you really have to have a little bit of both. And I'm going to leave that up to you and the person that trains me whether or not what part of the Force they really plan on using. So I really don't pick a side at this point.
Gotcha. So you're a little country and a little bit rock and roll. That's what you're telling me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You got to have the yin and the yang.
I guess the first time that I saw your company was actually quite a while ago, and I noticed that you were doing not only the hand-to-hand and martial arts type of instruction, but you're also sponsoring or holding seminars with Andrew Branca, and that made me think that there's more going on with your instruction than just physical. Physical instruction with how to do a technique or things like that. Could you talk about the philosophy that you have for the training company?
Absolutely, and that seminar is coming up in March, and I always encourage people to take that and really expand the knowledge. Right now, we're doing a special on that, so if you sign up now, it's actually $50 cheaper if you sign up by February 5th. And if you're not familiar with Mr. Branca's work, I mean, he's an NRA life member. And he really, when I say this, he literally wrote the book on self-defense. So to hear it from the source, you know, it's always purest from the source when you go to it. Drink water close to the source, it's going to be the purest. And here it is, and my philosophy and why I'm bringing guys like this to hear lecture and learn from is that a lot of times people will teach you the technique. They'll teach you the physical action or the physical movement behind how it is to either A, jab a guy in the eye, kick him in the groin, shoot him, stab him, whatever the technique is to defend yourself. But in the environment that we live in current modern times, it's not as simple as that. Everything, there's still laws, there's still guidelines, there's still regulations, there's still some type of force continuum you have to meet as a citizen. Different than a law enforcement officer, but still, use of force applies to the citizen as well as a law enforcement officer, although they are slightly different. So what I'm saying is an average citizen at the supermarket punches you and you poke his eye out because that's the technique you learned at the local dojo. Well, now you have a lawsuit on your hands, and that's not always, you may win in the street and lose in the courtroom. That's very important to think about that. Whether you're carrying a gun or a knife or a stick or empty hands combat, whatever it is, there's always going to be some type of liability, and you should know, not to say that it would skew your technique or whatever, but you should know, hey, and we talk about self-defense, it's always about de-escalation first. And if you can't, well, this is what I have to do, but I shouldn't still have the ability to do that in accordance with the law. And that's the most important part of just defending yourself in general. Plenty of times you see people have shootings or they get into an altercation and they may win in the street, but then they lose in the courtroom. So, I mean, it's a very hairy situation now in the legality system of the world that we live in.
And, also, I was thinking, you know, being so involved in different types of martial arts, is there an ethical component beyond just like legal liability that gets mixed in there with the instruction? Or
yeah, absolutely. There's always a fair trade-off, a yin and yang, a balance, whatever you want to call it. Because here it is, I may be justified to do something, but then the moral aspect comes in: is was it necessary? And that's the real thing, because. I'll give you an example here. I mean, I go with case law. Everyone knows certain cases, right? We talk about the Zimmerman case. Now, he was justified to shoot that person, but was it necessary? Now, in this particular instance, it was, due to the fact that he had no hand-to-hand skills. All right, now, the position that he was in, being mounted, another person on top of him, punching him, crushing in his head, he was justified to shoot that person. But if he had a little bit of hand-to-hand skills and was able to get up, it may not have been necessary. But because of his inability to react, we'll say physically, or avoid the confrontation or anything else, it's almost like he puts himself in that situation because he doesn't have any other skills. And he only has the firearm to go to. So that's when we talk about, yes, he was justified, but was it necessary? Could he have done something else? Him, no, because he had no other training and no other skills. And I think a lot of times, even in law enforcement training, that's kind of what happens, is people do not have any other enhanced training, so they fall back to the lowest level of their training, which sometimes, as you talk to law enforcement, like, well, I'll just shoot the guy. Okay, but is it justified? Is it necessary? And those are the questions you really have to ask yourself.
It's interesting to me that that you bring up the law enforcement aspect of the training there, because I know something that's a common refrain of gun owners, not just in New Jersey, but you know throughout the country, is a lot of times you know there's a minimum standard that a police officer or a law enforcement officer is required to meet as a condition of their employment. But they may not seek out that additional training. As a trainer, I'm sure you might not be unbiased in your opinion on this, but could you talk a little bit about the importance of you know having solid training for the law enforcement person out there? Or?
Absolutely. I mean, in law enforcement training, I mean, really we talk about getting to a moderate standard. And, you know, we call it a minimal standard. You want to call it a moderate standard. I mean, really.
I don't want to imply anything about using the phrase minimum standard, but whatever the requirement is, you train to a requirement. You're right, right.
Well, I call it a minimal standard, right? You call it a requirement. I'll call it a moderate. It's all relative. And what happens is, when the training happens, this is a generalization of all law enforcement training throughout the country, right? You talk about qualifications, twice a year qualification, you know, and that's pretty much, we'll say, the extent of law enforcement training, you know, is two qualifications a year. And what it is, it's a qualification. It's not truly a training day. It's making sure you can get rounds down range. And with that being said, that doesn't really prepare you, in my opinion. All right. So what happens is you have to seek out further knowledge. You have to seek out further training to continue to enhance your skills. Because if you don't, you are still responsible for your own actions. And if you're not properly trained and you're not ready for the fight and the fight comes to you, well, what are you going to do about it? You're just going to say, well, I guess I wasn't trained good enough. Well, and that doesn't apply to law enforcement. That applies to civilians as well. You want to be a gun-toting, gun-carrying civilian, and all of a sudden now you want to just buy the fanciest gun, put the best sight on it, get your fancy hand grips on it, and all of a sudden now you think that's going to help you win the fight. But in all reality, the basics win fights, the training win fights, the time and dedication you put to the craft, whatever it is, whether it's empty hands, firearms, is going to help you win the fight and not necessarily the equipment. And what happens is these qualifications or going to the range for you know one Sunday a month and not doing any dry fire practice and not doing any sighted fire training on your own and these things are what helps you win the fight. And a lot of times is people don't do these things beyond the simple qualification, beyond the course they may have to take to get their concealed carry permit. And they look at it as just a piece of paper that I received, I showed up at training, I got my certificate, and now I'm ready to go. And that's not necessarily the case, because that piece of paper is not going to save you. Your skills are going to save you. And a lot of people aren't focusing and concentrating on those skills.
Okay. If you might talk a little bit about kind of the path that brought you. I'm guessing with the different certifications and everything that you have, you didn't just one day wake up and say, hey, I want to teach self-defense, or I want to teach martial arts. I mean, with all these different, this has been a work in progress for a while. So, could you talk about the kind of the backstory to how you got where you are with your company and you know what inspired you to go down that path?
Yeah, I've always been fascinated with the martial arts ever since a young kid, and I started training in Jeet Kune Do, the art of Bruce Lee, and a lot of philosophies that Bruce Lee stated, and a lot of the different things that he always talked about was, you know, absorb what is useful, discard what is useless, and it's all about taking in and using what works for you, and not necessarily works for the next guy, because everybody is different, and everybody is specialized in their own body and how it's going to move, and techniques that work for you may not work for somebody else. So everybody basically has strengths and weaknesses, and you should train to your strengths. And with that philosophy and this other martial arts that I do besides that, yeah, Bruce Lee always taught to keep an open mind. And, you know, I know nowadays it's commonplace, you know, UFC and things to mix styles. You know, but you're talking 1968 with racism towards Asian people and just in general Asians not teaching Americans and the whole culture of that. And the philosophies I think he was saying for American times were pretty radical at the time. Now would be commonplace. You know, for a guy to be to box and wrestle and kick is pretty commonplace now. But you're talking 1968 was not so common. And I equate it sometimes now even to the firearm, where a lot of times, well, I look at it because I train so many different styles, whether it's Filipino martial arts, which deals with sticks and knives, long weapons, short weapons, flexible weapons, throwing weapons. I mean, all the way to Muay Thai, which is a sport, but also has great self-defense aspects because it all deals with heavy tools, headbutts, knees, a standing grappling game. You know, I've done Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and wrestling and different other kicking styles and things like that. And when you look at it, it all about is totality and not partiality. A lot of times everything must be compartmentalized. So my self-defense regimen or ideas, it's compartmentalized. Well, I have my gun, so I'm good. Or, I keep this nightstick over here by the door, so I'm going to be good. Well, what if you don't get to that nightstick? Or what if the guy punches you and you drop it on the ground and the guy's on top of you and you don't have any ground survival skills? So it's really about being the total warrior as opposed to the partial warrior. And even Bruce Lee says, if you see some of his old videos, he said, for the street, you must train every part of your body, even your little finger, is a weapon. And I think, especially in the gun world, a lot of times what happens is they think of the gun as the fight. But it's not necessarily the fight. It's a part of the fight. So punching is a part of it, kicking is a part of it, getting off the ground is a part of it, throwing the guy down, getting up after I'm thrown down, getting my gun out of the holster is a fight in itself. And what happens is a lot of times, especially gun guys, throughout training, you always see is they always want to concentrate on that gun and not saying, the gun's a part of my fight, but I have other force options, either A, legally and morally, I have to use the fourth gun because I can't go around and shoot everybody that bumps into me in the supermarket, so I have to be able to do something else. And if I can't, well, then I have to go to my gun. And I think that's how I like to incorporate all aspects of fighting as the totality of combat versus the partial reality of combat.
Okay. So when I got to your website and I was looking around to learn more about it a few months ago there, I came across a couple of phrases here that I thought were interesting. And the first one is that Justifiable Force is a modern day warrior training group. And, you know, I have to admit, the first thing that I thought of when I saw, you know, modern day warrior training group, I had this image of like Spartans or something in my head. Is that kind of like the flavor that we're getting there?
You know what? I wish we were on the Skype right now because I'd show you the entrance to my gym right here. It says, caution, this is Sparta, and then a guy kicking a guy down a hole. So, I mean, you read me to a T right there, John. I mean, and once again, it goes back to is the warrior being brought up, and he's not just a warrior in one aspect. He's a warrior in his whole, the warrior of life. Right? And all this stuff becomes a discipline. And the more you know, the more discipline you have, the more freedom you actually have. Because what happens is, if I'm disciplined in life, then my diet's straight. I'm disciplined in life, and I exercise, and now I'm strong and I'm fit. And maybe I don't have to. I have a little more confidence, and maybe I don't have to use my gun, or I have to use my knife, or I don't have to use these things, and I could de-escalate, or I could tap into those resources if I need them. If a big guy's on top of me, pounding my head in, well, now all that same stuff applies. And it also applies is in everyday life as well. So the warrior is really all encompassing, not only just physical, mental. It's the whole thing. A lot of the things I teach is a mental aspect of training, because that's the part sometimes that's missing from the martial arts. Is really 90% of the game is mental. I mean, if you can go against somebody, and I always use the criminal element for example. The criminal element generally is tougher than most people. You know, the criminal element generally came from a bad neighborhood, generally fought their whole entire life, was around guns, sometimes been shot and stabbed multiple times. And here it is. That's the guy that you're facing in the street. So you have to tap into that somehow, to your survival instinct, because here it is. We're hunter-gatherers by nature. And if we weren't had the ability to tap into the fight or flight and use that to our advantage, well, we would have been eaten by a saber-toothed tiger a long time ago or bitten by a poisonous snake. So here it is. In modern day, you have to. We don't have natural predators except the human predator, and we have to always keep that in our mindset of, that's the guy I'm going to face. Am I ready to face that guy right now? And if you're not, well, you better start training.
Okay. So now that you have a company where you're able to apply some of these philosophies and you know, do this training, you're not doing it alone. Could you tell us a little bit about the team that you have with you?
Yeah, you know, in any good company or any good enterprise or any good group, it's, you're only as good as your support team, and that's just the way it is. And so I bring in guys that I work with, and I bring in guys that have the same interests and have the same skill sets, and I give everybody has pretty much a speciality to them. So whether a guy was FBI trained, whether a guy was in the military, whether they're experts in firearms, martial artists, and I bring them all. You know, I got guys also that work in the medical side of it, EMTs and things like that. So when we do stuff like active shooter training, now we can also deal with some of the medical aspects of it and treating wounds and things like that. And here it is. One person can't know everything. And the instructor that tells you that they know everything is lying to you, because nobody knows everything. And the instructor that says to you, what have you changed or what have you improved in your own instruction? And you say nothing and you're closed-minded. Well, that's not a guy you should want to train with anyway, because nobody knows everything. Everybody learns. Everybody continues to evolve. Because if I taught you the same stuff that I knew 10 years ago, well, I didn't try to improve myself. And every day is a minor improvement. Every day is getting better. Every day is living the warrior lifestyle and improving yourself to be the modern-day warrior.
Okay. Kind of coming full circle here, and going back towards the beginning. One of the elements of your introduction there was, we mentioned you're a member of a special operations group. Could you talk a little bit about how about what that is and how that relates to what you're working with now?
Well, that pretty much relates to, you know, obviously is being, having the ability to get enhanced training and having training above and beyond the access that's to civilians. And not only that, is training with guys and showing them, you know, my specialty for the most part is always going to be defensive tactics. So working with people in defensive tactics that are on special operations groups and having the ability to work with a lot of different agencies and things with different special ops groups and things like that, and just having the ability to have ideas bounced off you, and also training and learning from different sources. And that's just that's what I talk about, the person that continues to improve and continues to evolve. You have to continue to train with different facets of these things, because not every one person is the true source of all information. And you have to go and look out and see who's doing it. And it's not necessarily the newest thing is always going to be the best, but somebody having a different twist on something. And when you get to train with a lot of different agencies and a lot of different people, especially in tactics and things like that, then you get to really learn from a wide variety of sources and really expand your own knowledge and look at things in a whole new perspective.
Okay, that's fantastic. I think, you know what, and I didn't talk to you about this before, so I'm going to kind of put you on the spot with this one, is yeah. What I think I'd like to do, now that you know, we've gotten to get to know you and the audience has gotten to get to know you a little bit, is, you know, whenever stories come up, you know, that have to do with use of force and that, I think we'd love to bring you back on the show and talk about that, if that's okay with you.
No, that's great. That's awesome. And to tell you the truth, like I even told you before, I know we spoke a little bit off the air before the show started. I could literally talk about use of force the whole entire till tomorrow. I mean, I'll sit there and be talking about it. I mean, studying case law and looking at the case law and really opening people's eyes to force is what I like to do the best. And especially the civilian world, because they don't really know force, because whenever anybody sees force from a civilian standpoint, it's ugly. It doesn't look good. But here it is. That person's never been involved in anything. And I always equate this too, even as a law enforcement officer, even in general, when I go to other law enforcement officers and I hang around or I see them or I train with them, whatever it is, most law enforcement officers have never been punched in the face. And what happens is, until you're punched in the face, you'll really see, I'm not saying that you have to get knocked out or things like that. What I'm saying is, in training, if you've never been punched in the face, then you've never known how to really defend yourself. I'm not saying that everyone needs to be punched in the face, but I'm saying what happens is people react differently. And I always equate this, we'll talk about shootings real quick. There's shooting to stop threat, and there's shooting out of panic and fear. And the same thing applies to empty hands or whatever. So if I shoot the person and I shot them one or two times and they go down, and I have the whereabouts in my mind to realize that, and then I stop shooting. Where if I draw my gun and I shoot the panic, most of the time the officer will slide lock every time because they're not shooting in a controlled setting in their mind. They're shooting to live, and that's the difference when we talk about use of force. The general public doesn't really understand it. They just think of, oh, man, that was excessive. Yeah, but have you ever tried to restrain anybody that was trying to kill you? Well, no. Well, what would you have done? And it's very interesting when you see now a lot of times you see news reporters go through like use of force type scenario training, whether it's in a simulator, whether it's airsoft or Sims, and then they go by the end, oh, man, I shot that guy and all he had was a ham sandwich. Well, yeah, absolutely. And that's why I said it's not easy, and it's not an easy job, but the general public doesn't know that because they never did the job. And a lot of people, just force in general, from a little child, we are taught, do not put your hands on people. Don't do it. Tell the teacher, especially now, more so now than ever. And I'm from a different generation, but even now I can only imagine, tell your teacher, you know, back in the day, you punched a bully in the face. I mean, that's how you stop bullying. You know, you didn't rather go and tell anybody. And that right now is even worse because now that's the generation that's coming up that never wrestled and never boxed or never did anything. So now what happens is it's time to use force on people. And A, they don't use enough force and they get killed. Or B, they use too much force and they don't know how to control themselves. Because really it's all about your ability to control yourself, your ability to control other people, and your ability to be in the middle somewhere.
You know, it's interesting they bring that up because that's something that I think about when, and this is outside the scope of what we expected to talk about tonight, but when people talk about how video games train people for violence, and, you know, I try to talk to them, I say, every person that I know who doesn't have actual experience with some sort of either a martial art or some sort of sport or something where they, you know, put their hands on each other. Playing a video game does not teach anyone violence. Like, you know, I know guys, you know, now I'm into gaming and stuff, but I know guys now who play all kinds of violent video games, all that stuff. They would not know what to do if they were confronted with an actual violent situation. It would be completely, outside the bounds of anything that they're prepared to deal with. And I don't know what you think of that, but it's just funny to me how people think that, you know, the video games versus violence thing. I don't know if you have different thoughts on that, but
I have two schools of thought. Well, one's not my own school, but I know Lieutenant Dave Grossman, he has a whole book on, you know, video games,
right,
or training this killers, Lieutenant Dave Grossman, and you know, West Point psychologist and stuff. So hey, that's his whole thing. I mean, I know, like you're saying, is I know people that game. You know, I don't game anymore. At one time, I did. But just a funny thing we usually say is when we get people and we start to train them, and we always say, you know, the Xbox will never punch you in the face.
Right.
You know, from a law enforcement training standpoint, you know, the Xbox ain't gonna punch you in the face. So what happens now is you're here, and all of a sudden you got really strong thumbs, but you can't do a push up or do a sit up. And here it is now. You're about to, you know, embark on a career in law enforcement. Yet you have really strong thumbs. Well, I don't really see that guy becoming a maniac and killing people, although there are a lot of different schools of thought on the actual training. Although I did read this thing recently that talked about video game training starting to really enhance people's hand-eye coordination and decision-making skills. That I actually read a study on that about really being assessed and looked at.
Okay. Yeah, that, I mean, it's an interesting thing to think about. It's just, I don't know. To me, there's like a there's an immediacy in the physicality of actually, you know, interacting with a person that way that there isn't with, you know, a controller. Like just from a perception standpoint, like, you know, real flesh, real blood. Like it's a completely different dynamic to me. It's anyway.
Yeah, well, so it's like watching a movie. I mean, everybody that watched right. Nightmare on Elm Street is going to go and hack people up. You know,
right.
It's just how's it really different? You know, I think the only thing with the video game is more like you're the one doing it, maybe, you know, psychologically,
right.
But, you know, I'm not a doctor here, but I don't see that much of it really, you know. Really, when it comes to firearms and the whole thing now, is it's really mental illness. And once again, we talked about this earlier, a lot of times people want to blame the firearm. Let's blame the gun. No, you have to blame the operator. Blame the person with mental illness getting a hold of weapons. So it's not necessarily, you know, we all did, you know, it's the age-old saying is guns don't kill people, people kill people, but it still holds true. I mean, the guns on the counter is never hurting anybody by itself.
Okay. So is there anything important going on that you don't think we've covered that we probably should, or how do you feel?
Yeah, well, I got a couple of events coming up. Obviously, the one we talked about on March 5th with the law of self-defense with Andrew Branca. I always tell people, if you're carrying a gun, if you're worried about self-defense, you got to know the law. I mean, what you can and cannot do is very important when it comes to the ability to defend yourself. And to tell you the truth, a lot of people don't even know the law. And even from the simplest standpoint, a lot of times, even, I know New Jersey, right, you know, the CCW permit is pretty much non-existent. But even if you have a gun in your home, I mean, people don't even know. I mean, I've talked to people that says, you know, I have to retreat out of my own home before I can use deadly force. What? It's your house. Oh, we don't have castle doctrine. Well, the castle doctrine is an old common law. It doesn't just because it doesn't say castle doctrine in 2C, doesn't mean I can't use deadly force to protect my property, as you were, to protect myself inside my home.
Right.
Obviously, we can't use deadly force to protect property, but at that point, you're protecting yourself. So you don't have to retreat from your home. And things like that, I think it's important to know, especially when we're talking about firearms, things like that.
Yeah, we've had Andrew Branca on the show before, actually, and he's fantastic.
Really?
Oh, yeah. After I read his book, it was right after the second edition of Law of Self-Defense came out. We actually interviewed him. So we're familiar with Andrew, and he does excellent work. He's fantastic.
And then over on March 13th, we're also doing a pepper spray personal defense tactics seminar over in Union, over at Union's United Taekwondo. I know we talked to Sean last week, and Rob's a good friend of mine too. And we're doing a pepper spray defensive tactics seminar over there. And because once again, the firearm, the CCW permit doesn't exist in New Jersey. I mean, let's just face it, there's 1 million gun owners, I think 1,000 carry permits. So the idea of people really carrying firearms to defend themselves is few and far between. So a lot of things we got to deal with ourselves is what are the self-defense products I can carry? You know, so OC, pepper spray, is the number one. I mean, law enforcement doesn't have that on the belt for the past 50 years for no reason. I mean, this stuff works to a degree. And also, you know, for the future, we're going to start doing some tactical flashlight, tactical pen courses, you know, everyday carry things you can carry every day that you can use to defend yourself if need be. And we're also looking at doing some active killer civilian response training and having people that are civilians, you know, because the old run, hide, fight, you know, I don't know if you seen last week, they had an active shooter in the Navy Yard over in, I believe it was California. And if you read the Facebook post, it said, active shooter in the building, run, hide, fight, period. That's the protocol. And when you look at that and I see run, hide, fight, now it's not a bad thing to do. I mean, I say run, hide, fight, but when I say from a civilian standpoint, some of the things, okay, we all know how to run and we know how to hide, but sometimes hiding behind something may or may not save you. There's all schools of thought and all this stuff. We're all talking conceptually here.
Right.
Is, you know, barricading, obviously, besides just hiding. But not only that is, something as simple as cover versus concealment, okay? So cover stops bullets, concealment shrouds your ability to be seen. Now, the average person, the non-shooter, no idea what I just said. So here it is, you tell them to hide, and for a reason in mind, because I watched San Bernardino, and you watched part of the video, and it was, I think it was a restaurant, and you see the active shooters start happening, people running everywhere. There's a staircase going down to a cellar, and there's a bar. Two people duck behind the bar and hide. Two people run down the stairs to the basement. Now, nothing happened, but here it is. Why would you stop right there behind something that doesn't stop bullets as opposed to escaping? And all we're trying to do is get people to think outside the box and think about the old Colonel Cooper's mentality of the one thin thinking. When this happens, then I will do this. And that little thing like that could save your life. I mean, it really could.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. You know, it's funny because as soon as you started talking about cover versus concealment, I went right back to boot camp in the Marines, and they're talking about it. So I'm definitely with you on that stuff. Do you guys spray anyone with your pepper spray course?
We don't. You know, it's funny that people ask that before. I mean, in law enforcement training, it's customary to get shot with OC, to see how you react under it. I understand if it's taken away, it could be used against you, but I always look at it this way. How do you test effectiveness? You want to make the person a believer. Well, I don't go to the range and the guy doesn't shoot me, and they go, "Oh man, I really believe that 45 worked. Now I'm going to start carrying it." You know, so for the level that we're training people, civilians, I don't believe. I mean, maybe at the very least, a secondary exposure where you just smell it, or you kind of
that's exactly what I was thinking. As if they get something back on them, yeah.
So not so much because in law enforcement training, you take a direct hit, and then you got to go through a
the obstacle course or whatever.
Yeah. And I mean, and here's the best part. So I was at some training not too long ago, and they were talking about people injured with OC spray. And they said the only thing that really gets injured, the only person that really gets injured and OC spray works the best on is law enforcement trainees. They just fold. Because because we all think of, but in a real life, a lot of times if a guy's on drugs, psychotic, mental patient, hell bent on hurting you,
yeah,
it just makes them mad.
Yep.
You know, but for the civilian standpoint, remember, you just got to spray a guy enough to get away. It's not really, I got to spray him now, control him. I got to spray him, and then I have to escape. So, as a diversion, as just a way to get somebody off you, or just a deterrent, like, hey, man, back up. And if they, listen, most predators, they seek prey. Predators don't hunt other predators. Lions don't hunt other lions. Lions hunt zebras. And they're not looking for a fight. They're looking for someone they could dominate. And if you show you can't be dominated, well, then they're moving on. You know, that's just a predator mindset.
Oh, man, that's outstanding. Thank you for joining us tonight. It's been great having you on.
All right, John. Thanks for having me. I'm proud to be a sponsor of the show, and hopefully I'll be on again, and we'll be talking some more things.
Yeah, definitely. We're proud to have you as a sponsor, and we're definitely going to have to figure out a time where we can meet up.
All right, John. Thank you.
And that was our interview with Mr. Michael Wolford. That was our interview with Mr. Michael Wolford of Justifiable Force Training. And one of our new sponsors who were extremely happy to have supporting us. We couldn't be prouder. Moving into our next segment here. Now, this is sponsored by NJ Concealment Furniture, and it's our Calling the Shots segment. So, NJ Concealment Furniture, come and find it, is their tagline. So, Calling the Shots. First thing up, we have an A-rated senator who's voting against concealed carry in Virginia. And apparently still thinks that he's an advocate for the Second Amendment. How does that work?
So, we have Virginia State Senator Hanger, who's a Republican, but apparently he's a Republican.
He's a Republican.
Because he can't understand what supporting the Second Amendment really is. By sacrificing his A rating for the NRA, from the NRA, and voting against a bill that would ease the restriction on gun rights in Virginia.
So it was a constitutional carry bill, and State Senator Hanger says, I remain a strong supporter of the Second Amendment, but SB 48 would have, in my opinion, gutted our carefully constructed process for obtaining a permit.
Oh.
Have you heard this idea that everything before the but doesn't matter?
Yes. He goes on to say, good gun laws protect and preserve our Second Amendment rights at the same time they enhance the safety of law enforcement and the general public. Well.
Yeah.
We need laws to protect and preserve laws.
Yeah, it's kind of silly.
Kind of silly. It's downright stupid.
Yeah. So we're linking to WHSV3, who's working hard for you.
Let me finish his little quote here.
Oh, you want to finish the quote?
Yes, because I think it's outstanding.
Okay.
And he goes on to say, I didn't pay attention to the fact that I was the only Republican opposing the bill.
So he's the only Republican?
He's the only Republican. Apparently, they have a three-party system. The Democrats, the Republicans, and the Republicans.
No, the Republican.
Yes, the Republican.
A party of one.
Exactly.
I like that Republican. That's pretty funny. Did you hear that somewhere?
I don't think so.
Trademarked.
Yes, trademarked. Trademark Bear Arm Show.
All right. Now, the next story here. You know what? You do you want to start presenting this? Because, or should I just run with it?
Just run with it.
Okay. So I think everyone's heard the story from Gun Saves Lives. Everyone's seen the headline. How? Actually, here we'll just go with the headline. Breaking huge win. Maryland scary gun autoban struck down entirely.
Gun Saves Lives.
So that's the headline from Gun Saves Lives. Was that big enough? Did I need to go bigger?
I don't think you went as big as they did.
Okay. Okay. You know what? We'll add some effects to that.
There you go.
We're going to add some reverb.
So big, we need to add effects.
That's right. All right. If you actually go and look at the section of the decision that they kind of splice out here.
Don't forget the first line, just released.
Right. Well, just released February 4th. It's been a little bit. I can't believe they still haven't fixed this. All right, so the opinion doesn't strike down the gun ban, okay? The opinion says that the circuit court overturns the appeals court overturns the district court's opinion, upholding the Firearm Safety Act in Maryland. And then it sends it back. So it vacates the decision, sends it back to the circuit court, saying that they have to evaluate it using strict scrutiny. But it doesn't rule the scary gun ban unconstitutional. That's not what it did. Okay?
So what did it do?
I just told you what it did. The appeals court says, no, district court, you were wrong in upholding that law based on the reasoning that you used. You need to reconsider this case applying strict scrutiny. Okay, so it's good for us because it means a bad decision got kicked out. And hopefully they'll have a better decision. But at least we know the appeals court is on them. You know, the appeals court is looking at this, I think, in the right way. When you look at the appeals court, they directly cite the decision in Heller, the majority decision in Heller. I guess we need to be specific now, because sometimes people like to cite dissents. But they cite the majority decision in Heller. They say that the Second Amendment is implicated in the, you know, and you can't just go around banning whole classes of firearms. So, not quite as huge as Gun Saves Lives has it.
Huge, John.
Yeah. Sunday.
That's huge.
Huge. But still good for us. So, yeah. Yeah, that's that story. So, good for us, but not like, oh my God. All right, what's up next?
Next we have Michigan is joining the fight to be a constitutional carry state. Lansing, Michigan. Legislation was just introduced. This was on February 2nd when their legislation is in session. It was introduced to allow law-abiding citizens to carry concealed weapons without a government-issued permit.
Without a permit.
And the bill was introduced Tuesday by four House Republicans.
Don't let Senator Hanger know.
Well, he's in another state, thankfully.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he could find out and go up there and give them a piece of his mind. Although,
right.
Maybe Michigan doesn't have the carefully constructed screening process that Virginia has, you know, and
right.
Yeah.
Carefully constructed laws to protect the Second Amendment.
All right.
And serve it better.
So another state in the mix for constitutional carry.
Carry without permit.
That's right.
Concealed carry without permit.
Very nice. All right. You have anything else for this week? I think that's all I got.
For this week, what I do have is a great big thank you to Black Bag Resources. Go check them out. We're going to have links to our sponsors. They're on the Bear Arms
Show on the website. They are on the website as we speak.
Bam.
Pshaw! And if you follow us on social media, you've been seeing their stuff. You've been seeing their stuff up on Twitter and Instagram.
Right.
All that noise. And
go check out Justifiable Force Training if you need some self-defense training.
Justifiable Force.
Go talk to Michael at Justifiable Force. You can trust him because he's got an awesome name.
Michael W.
Yes. Us Michael W's got to stick together. And go check out NJ Concealment Furniture, because I'll guarantee you that you can't go and find it.
You can try.
That makes sense.
You can try. Yeah.
You can try to find it, but you got to watch the videos on his stuff. It's crazy good.
Yeah. All right. So with that, thanks to our sponsors. Thank you for you guys hanging out, and we'll see you next
time.
Thank
you for listening.
Thank Thank you for listening to the Bear Arm Show. If you enjoyed today's show, please head over to iTunes to rate and leave a review. This helps spread the word, and we thank you for it. For show notes or updates about new episodes, please visit www.beararmshow.com.